Hello, I'm Bishop Jaime Soto. The pandemic continues to change the way we serve our communities. It has also given us opportunities. In this uncertain time, let's strive to partner effectively with parents. Let's work together to equip families for practicing their faith every day at home and in the community. Jesus is calling us to holiness and encourages us to rejoice and be glad in the midst of our challenges. This year, Ministry Days will virtually equip parish and school ministry leaders for these new realities, which include Zoom calls, Facebook Lives, and Insta stories. I invite all the faithful in the Diocese of Sacramento to attend our Ministry Days on Saturday, September 26th. There will be keynotes and 40 workshops in English and Spanish meant to inspire and equip you for ministry in your parish and your home. You can find more information and register at www.ministrydays.com.
From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour as we head into our 21st year on the air. So appreciate everybody who has helped us along the way, our guests, our listeners, of course, and people who have helped underwrite the program. If you'd like to learn more about underwriting the program, go to scd.org and call up the Bishop's Hour, and you'll find the contact information for Gabe, our producer, Gabe Sorensen, and for me, and tell you how easy it is to help be an underwriter for the Bishop's Hour. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Deacon Kevin Staskow. Deacon, good day to you.
Good to talk to you too, Bob. How are things going?
Things are going fine. The air's a little clearer, a little cleaner than it's been.
that's good. We had a couple of really clear days.
Yes.
Two or three clear days, and then now we're back. I noticed the sky is...
kind of hazy.
The sky is, gray and hazy, and you can't see the blue anymore. So.
Yes, it's... it's interesting. I saw a headline. I'd been saying, I wonder when the locusts are coming. And I saw a headline in the newspaper today said that very thing. So, but apparently there are no locusts nearby.
Yeah. No locusts. That's good, right? That's one good thing, right?
Yes.
We gotta hold on to some hope. No locusts.
That should be our motto. Yeah, and we take that as a positive sign. Well, things are, we've been talking about Ministry Days for a while now, and it's now upon us. And we had a wonderful intro today from Bishop Soto, urging everybody to go to Ministry Days. And explain, there are a couple of days here, Friday, the 25th of September, Saturday, the 26th. Explain a little bit about Friday, if you will.
Friday is a staff training day, so principals and of Catholic schools and their faculties and pastors and their staffs from the parishes are coming together. And the original idea was they'd be watching this as a group from their remote location, socially distanced. We have two keynote talks and two discussion sessions. So the idea is that you bring your staff, you'd hear a presentation all together as a staff, and then you'd have some time to discuss and do some planning after that. The first keynote in the morning is Bob McCarty, and Dr. Bob McCarty was with us last year to talk about disaffiliation, the people that are moving away from the church and moving away completely from organized religion, and why it's important that helping us to understand those folks and how to reach out to them. This year, he's back to talk to our parish staffs about how do we strategize about getting these people back, about reaching out to them, about really evangelizing them in our communities. I think it's important that people realize that when we talk about a parish is just a geographic area, just like a diocese is a geographic area. And when we say, this is our parish, the parish is really called to reach out to every man, woman, and child in that entire area.
In that area, that's exactly right. I think people, that's a very good point. I think people forget that.
And I think we, you know, we quickly only serve the people that show up at Mass.
Or right.
Who use the envelopes or who come to our programming. But really the idea is that those people that come to Mass and come to our programming, they should be organizing. Hey, how are we going to reach out to every man, woman, and child in this parish? And so Bob McCarty will help these parish staff teams and these Catholic schools to really kind of look at how do we do, you know, how do we outreach? How do we do ministry in our school and parish setting that really reaches out beyond ourselves, beyond the bubble, I call it. You know, I really feel like I feel it even more since I've been ordained a deacon the last 2 years that my entire life has lived within a Catholic bubble. You know, so you know, very few times during the week am I interacting with people who aren't Catholic or who don't share the Catholic viewpoint or aren't trying to, you know, who aren't practicing Catholics. So I think it's important that we realize that that's really not the call. The call is not to sit in the bubble and be comfortable. The call is to get out there in the real world and to interact with these folks, again, especially with these folks that have, they've been part of our communities and they've rejected them and moved on, right? So how do we engage these people again? How do we connect with them? How do we also realize that that's really the call? The call is to reach these people that haven't been reached. The call is to get everyone in your parish boundary to heaven. If that was really our mission as a parish, I think we'd do things a lot differently. We'd be a little less worried about whether Joey came to the confirmation retreat and a little less worried about how many of the, how many of the people came back for their second communion. We'd also be worried about a lot of these other things. And so I think Bob McCarty's talk in the morning is really going to call them to action to say, hey, we need to make a plan. We need to make a plan to do what the parish is really supposed to do in this new reality. And that's the issue. We have a couple of new realities going on, right? We have more and more people walking away from the church and organized religion completely. And we also have the pandemic. So how in this new reality do we continue to be good disciples of Jesus Christ? So that's the morning of that day.
And I should just say, Bob McCarty is excellent. I've talked to him in the past, and he's excellent.
Yeah, I would say that, his background is being for many years, I think over 20 years, he was the executive director of the National Federation of Catholic Youth Ministry, in constant dialogue with the bishops on how to outreach the youth and young adults and how to be relevant in their lives. So I think out of, anyone in the country, I think he really understands what we've been trying to do all these years. And he's been, a lot of these concepts are not new. It's just that, in this time that they're particularly relevant because he talks about the real desperate need we need to create a new ministry map. The map we're using is the wrong map. We're not, the young people and the world is changing, and in many ways we have an old map. We're trying to navigate the journey with an old map, and it's just not working. So it may take us creating a new map and new ways of negotiating and navigating that map. And so I think it would be a really good experience for anybody. We're welcoming parishes to register as a parish and then all the leadership of that parish to come in the morning to listen to Bob. And then in the afternoon, we have a couple of speakers basically talking about racial dialogue. How do we have a real dialogue about racism and the institutional racism that exists even in our parish communities and in our school communities? And how do we interrupt that culture of racism and move towards a different kind of culture? So we have Dr. Javier Watson, and we have, the other man is from Sac State. He's a professor at Sac State and is there as well, Dr. Wazi. And he will be, they will be working together to talk to the staffs about, how do we interrupt this culture of racism that sometimes creeps into our parishes and schools? How do we enter into honest dialogue about issues of race in our polarized political and Catholic culture? And how do we move forward in that? And again, the idea is for these staffs to listen to the presentation and then spend some time in dialogue and making a plan on how they're going to change things moving forward, both in the morning with Bob McCarty and also in the afternoon. So I think it's going to be an exciting day. I think very worthwhile. Not too much time, but enough time to like take something really practical home. These teams will have something to really work with moving forward.
Well, that's great. And, you know, Deacon Kevin, you say you talk about, you know, we're supposed to get everybody in our geographic area, whether it's a parish or a diocese, to heaven. And it's interesting to me, and we see it with Bishop Soto. We saw it with Bishop Wiegand prior to him, Bishop Quinn prior to that. These people are members of the community. You'll see Bishop Soto talking to the Sacramento City Council or to the Board of Supervisors or to a Chamber of Commerce, or you know, not just celebrating Mass or not just doing Catholic events. Although on Ash Wednesday, where he goes to the steps of the state capitol, or he goes to the Moss Federal Building, one time to Federal Courthouse, having Ash Wednesday in those places, really taking it out into the community. And in fact, you'll see him write op-eds in the Sacramento Bee or other papers, and you'll hear people say, you know, I read that op-ed, and I thought I better get myself back to Mass. I like what that bishop said in that op-ed. You know, those things are important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really important. I think that dialogue with the culture is really important. I think sometimes our parish staffs and our pastors on the parish level are so just kind of overwhelmed overworked with just general parish maintenance and just keeping the programs going, that they don't have time for that meaningful interaction with and in the culture. You know, I remember that I heard a presentation once from the Glen Mary organization. Mm-hmm. And the Glen Mary organization, they work in rural areas where they're not in the United States, where there are very few Catholics. So they started a lot of parishes, for instance, in the South, where there is very few Catholics, right. And it's mostly like, you know, Southern Baptist, I guess, or other Protestant denominations, but there's hardly any Catholics. So, and these are areas that just don't have parishes established. So, but when they sent a lay couple or a religious sister or a priest and a religious sister together, whoever the team was, to start a new parish, they had very strict guidelines. They were only allowed to spend one third of their time on parish business. They were supposed to spend a third of their time serving the poor and the marginalized, doing direct service in the community.
Wow.
And the other third of the time, they were supposed to be spent engaged with the civic culture. So mm-hmm. like going to parish council, or a student, or not parish council, but going to city council meetings,
right.
You know, sitting on, you know, going to the Lions, being part of the Lions Club, being part of the, you know, Chamber of Commerce,
right.
You know, being involved with religious, interfaith or ecumenical organizations within that city or town. So working for the good of the town as a whole and making sure that the Catholic voice was around the table at those, you know, things. And but a third of the time they could spend on,
wow.
You know, preparing people for the sacraments and Mass and all that, but only a third of the time. And that formula they found to work. That's how you build a parish that's healthy. That's how you build a parish that's healthy. And so, I've been concerned for years about that many of our parishes have kind of, in a sense, lost their way, and that all of the efforts of the volunteers and the staff gets to be on the business of the parish, and very little is engaged in the community. And we take a small group, the St. Vincent de Paul, the Social Justice Committee, well, they'll do our outreach, right? And the rest of the parish is just not really involved, right? We drop off the diapers or the cash or the ramen noodles or whatever it is, right? But we are not actually engaged in that work. And I just thought that modeling from the staff and from the institution of the parish at the beginning, and this is when they're going into an area where there is no Catholic parish, they're renting a storefront in a strip mall, and saying, this is the parish of St. Joseph's, and we're starting it from zero, right? But from the beginning, they're not just putting their whole time into, like, let's have church, let's get a bunch of people here, let's pray people to the sacraments. They're saying, yes, we can spend a third of our time doing that. And the other two-thirds of the time, we're engaging the culture. We're engaging, you know, we're serving the poor. And I really feel like if we could get back to that sense of, if we could get back to that sense of mission, I think that would be a really great thing. And to realize that these issues like racism and the institutional racism that's just present in our culture everywhere, that we need to take these issues more seriously. These issues of the world are really the issues that we as a parish should be embracing, should be dialoguing about, certainly shouldn't be ignoring, you know? And I think that, you know, it's important that we as deacons and priests, we continue to preach on those things, even if people don't like to hear it, right? I came to church to get away from all that stuff, right? I mean, some people have that attitude, but I really don't think that's ever been the attitude. And I don't think our bishop is very engaged in all of those issues,
right,
on the diocesan level, or even with in the state level, and in direct dialogue with the,
yep,
with the governor's staff and things like that, right? And why aren't we? Why doesn't that trickle down more to our parish leadership? Not just the priests, but, you know, the other paid leadership and the heads of our parish council, just really being involved in the civic community and starting to, you know, bring the Catholic voice into the public square. You know, part of that, you know, is the election's coming up. Are we going out and voting? But then, when there isn't an election, in between elections, how are we active? You know, I think we talked before about this whole thing about the sex ed in the public school and people being really outraged about, you know, some of the curriculum that are in the public school, but they don't realize that if they look at the law doesn't mandate a single curriculum for every school district in California. It allows every school board to pick their own.
Mm-hmm.
So if our parents in different communities in our diocese would get active with the county and the city school boards, we could actually help to dictate, there's some things that have to be covered that we may not feel really comfortable with as Catholics, but there's a lot of flexibility in what the school district can choose. And if we were more activist as parents, we could definitely limit some of the material that we don't like being taught in our communities. But we'd have to be active in the school board.
Yeah, and I think
we'd have to
active ahead of time, where you're not just reactive, where, oh, the school board just announced they're going to do this, and then you look like you're simply a naysayer, as opposed to being actively involved ahead of time.
Well, and I also think that there's ways to do it, right? The law has been enacted, and the law requires that, you know, the school districts, you know, have parent input and all this other stuff.
Right.
So there's things, but again, we have to be on top of that. And if we were more engaged, maybe we could have blocked some of this content being presented. And I also think, you know, what you see on the internet is always the most extreme example, right? So I think, remember that many of these public school teachers are not sex education advocates, and they feel just as uncomfortable presenting the material to kids as you might.
Right.
And so they're not, you know what I mean? So all of this material that you see on the internet is not being presented, but it could be, right? And so it's that idea of, like, how do we as parents, you know, how are we more active and involved and not just kind of hiding our head in the sand and not noticing, right? So I think it's important. But again, I think it's a tough time to be pushing people on this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because we're in the middle of the pandemic,
right.
But our role and our mission as a church and our mission as disciples of Christ doesn't change when there's a pandemic. In fact, we should, you know, this should be acting more as a call to action for us, right? Especially 6 months in, right? I mean, it's time for us to realize that we need to continue to play an active role in these issues.
Absolutely. I mean, you even go back to the plague and whenever it was long ago, how active the church was in ministering to the people. way beyond ministering the sacraments and, you know, the beliefs, et cetera. I mean, just ministering to the people in need.
Yeah. Well, and I think we, you know, and I do think that our Catholic Charities organizations all across the country and all across the world are really, you know, really active in helping, you know, in helping people through this. I just think, you know, our parishes have to take their part as well, and we need to keep that on the radar, keep that, you know, moving forward. Things support. But anyway, back to the Ministry Days thing, that Friday is staff training. I think it's 9 to 3, but you can find all the information at ministrydays.com.
Right.
You can also register there, register your parish there, and be involved. And then we also have our Saturday event, which I'm sure you've talked about,
right,
some speakers on the air. But that is going to be our usual thing, where we have a prayer service in the morning with the bishop and a keynote talk in English, and we have a keynote talk in Spanish a little later in the day. All through the day, we have workshops. We also have networking sessions, so different ministries are having networking sessions during the day. We have a virtual exhibit hall where people can go into different video conferences and talk to people, or you know, purchase things or get information on different you know, materials for religious education in your home and at your parish. And all of the workshops this year are designed to be more practical. So the idea is to try to help families to be able to pass on the faith to their kids, inspire families to pray more at home and give them some resources, help catechists kind of, you know, during this pandemic, how do I do a better Zoom or a better video call or video meeting? You know, how do we facilitate small groups? How do I recruit more volunteers? Since my groups need to be smaller because of the pandemic, I need more volunteers. So how do I recruit more volunteers? How do I pray or inspire my, how do I pray, you know, increase my prayer life, but then how do I also inspire my families and my program to pray more at home and support their, you know, the formation of their young people? So, again, I think it's a great opportunity for parents, for catechists, for any volunteer at the parish to grow in the faith themselves and also take home some techniques that might help them in their ministry. And again, you can register for that at ministrydays.com. We have a longer program this year because we have a longer lunch and there's a bunch of things, but it goes from 9 o'clock in the morning all the way till 5 in the evening. There's several different workshop sessions that you can attend. And then if you register for Ministry Days, it costs $25, but if you register, you will have access to all the workshops until the end of the year. So you'll be able to see... You can see, if you only speak English, you can see 20. You can get 24 workshops for $25. And if you, you know, if you speak both languages, both English and Spanish, I think it's 45 or 47,
right,
workshops for $25. So it's a really good deal. It's a good opportunity for you to, for the first time, you can see everything if you want to, because we're gonna tape everything and post it online till the end of the year if you do pay and register.
So the
you know, people do.
The Spanish workshops don't necessarily, the Spanish and English, they're not just an English version or a Spanish version of the same workshop. They're separate workshops.
Yes. Yeah, so some of them are.
Some of them are similar.
The Spanish equivalent.
Right.
But, you know, I would say more than half of the Spanish workshops are completely different workshops from completely different people. So
well, that's great.
We do have a few of our presenters, like Andrea Adebalo. She's doing Theology of the Body, how to talk to your kids about sex from a Catholic perspective. She's doing that same workshop in English and Spanish.
Sure.
But most of them are different. So there's a lot of different opportunities. And, you know, we're just trying to encourage people. Again, we've taken a risk to do an online ministry days. Most of the other dioceses in our area chose not to do anything. They chose not to do one. Because they figured this wasn't a good year to do it. We can't do it live, so we're just not going to do it. And our you know, as we usually do, we just went for it. We said, you know, hey, let's do this. We think we might be able to actually reach more people this way. So, you know, I'm just encouraging people. People are a little slow to register online. We found all across the board that for online things, people register at the last minute. So, but we'd like you to register now so that we know you're coming. So if you would, you know, if people are interested, they should register at ministrydays.com. Check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it. And we're getting better and better at doing these virtual things because we've been, for the last 6 months, we've been practicing with all of our online offerings.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you, at any point, did you just want to throw your hands up and say, don't do it? That's just not what happens here in the Diocese of Sacramento. I've never heard somebody say, yeah, really we just scrub
like
that.
I don't really do that. You can talk to my staff. I don't really do that. I kind of have the opposite. Like, I bet you we could do it. We could figure out some
way. Yeah, let's figure it out.
Right?
Yeah.
So we just decided to, to try to figure it out. And I do think it's going to be worthwhile. I think people will get a lot of value out of it. And I just think, you know, to me, even video meetings or video workshops, there is some opportunity to really connect with others. And I feel like that connection is so important right now. We've been doing these workshops all month. For Suicide Awareness Month, and over the speakers are talking about how important that connection is. And I just think there's a lot of catechists and parish volunteers and, you know, people that regularly even, you know, regular, you know, daily mass goers that have been cut off from their communities. And I feel like all of these online things, although it's not the same as being live, it is an opportunity to connect and to network and to learn something. And I do also feel like this time of pandemic is really a time that a lot of people have just taken the time to learn something new or mm-hmm. taken the time to try something new or rediscover those hobbies that they put off for so long. So I'm hoping that, you know, people that don't usually come to Ministry Days might check it out because, you know, hey, it's something to do, you know. You know, I can't go to the football game or whatever. Maybe I'll, come to the Religious Education Congress this time. But anyway, Ministry Days, I think, will be a worthwhile thing for people. And please check it out. I mean, I just read the workshop. There's so many different workshops. I mean, read through the descriptions and see what appeals to you. I think there's a lot of different workshops for a lot of different people and different ministries there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bargain. It's like a dollar a workshop. it's really
or
cheaper than that actually. If we've got 45, so yeah, it's 50 cents a workshop. That's a deal.
Yep. Yeah, it is a deal this year, and I really hope that people will take advantage and register. You know, the nice thing about Ministry Days is you get to be in those you get to see three workshops. Live and interactive, and so that's part of it. And then also hear a keynote talk and prayer service with the bishop. And then then there's an opportunity to watch the videotaped workshops after the fact. And I think it'll be worthwhile for people. I really do think they'll get their money's worth.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I like that one third, one third, one third. And you mentioned football. Maybe I could do my one third. By representing the faith at football games.
You know, I hear you're a pretty good, color commentator on the side, right?
I've done a bit of that work, yes. that's not really working.
No, but, you know, I'm sure you'd be good at that. You've always got some really good insights on things, Bob.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's been a joy being doing college football on the radio. It's a real joy. Yeah. Well, Deacon Kevin Saskow, thanks so much for all you do. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today, and we'll look for just an outstanding turnout or turn home, turn in for Ministry Days.
That's great. Well, I hope so too. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for the time today.
Yeah. God bless. Take care. Okay. That's Kevin Staskow and Deacon Kevin Staskow and talking about Ministry Days. And go to ministrydays.com to sign up. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.
Watkins, Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. You are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome back, and thanks, John, for all you do with our great Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. Never more important than it is right now. So much happening, so many people in need for just so many reasons. The pandemic, yeah. The fires, yeah. The unemployment caused by the pandemic and caused by fires. You forget how many people have had to evacuate and be homeless and be away from their jobs and on and on and on and on. Just remarkable, the number of things going on. Well, we are just pleased and honored to welcome back Rex Rolanka, who is the director of music for the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament right here in downtown Sacramento. Rex, always a pleasure. It's been much too long.
Yes, definitely. And it's my pleasure to be back and finally talking about sacred music in particular.
Yes, I'll tell you, I've always been so, you know, you go to Mass and you sing the songs and you listen to the organ and you all that ever since I was born, practically. And I've always had that curiosity, like, how long have we played this music? Have we sung these songs? Have we had this sort of music? And you're the guy. You're the expert here.
Well, I like to call myself a doer. I'm not like the expert, like in the entire history, but I know a little bit. I can impart a little bit of knowledge.
Well, Rex, tell us about yourself. You know, I in preparing for this, I saw something you had posted on Facebook, which right near the start of the pandemic, which I thought was just so right on the money. You talked about, you know, a retreat at home.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought everybody in the country, everybody in the world should read what you wrote there.
Wow.
It was very short, very simple, but about, you know, you talked about you used to go up to, you know, the Abbey of New Clairvaux up, you know, in Bina and all that, and that's not probably able to do that now. And what about having your retreat at home?
Yeah. Well, you know, the idea behind the retreat is to basically get away from the world for me and to listen to God speak in the silence.
Yeah.
And especially at the beginning, when we were told we had to stay at home, you only left for essential things.
Right.
You only went to work if you were an essential worker. I think the vast majority of us had a lot of time at home, and probably a lot of us were alone.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a good time, especially for me, who juggles working at Jesuit and the cathedral.
Right.
It was a good time for me to reconnect with my faith, kind of a forced downtime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was actually at the beginning to me a blessing to have that time. And especially because my wife and I were preparing for our very first baby.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was born in July,
oh.
And it forced me and my wife to spend more time together. And when my baby was born, boy, do I now cherish those times when it was just the both of us.
Oh, that's how wonderful. You know, it's interesting. I remember growing up, and I didn't really appreciate the prodigal son story. Being a younger brother, and I don't understand. The other brother ran away and did all this stuff, and you did, you know, you followed the rules, and now he's celebrating. And then I had a son. And suddenly the prodigal son story became my favorite story, you know. So, you never know how the good Lord's going to work. Well, Rex, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been at the cathedral for some time, and you teach at Jesuit as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a member of the Fighting Irish.
I am.
Yeah.
So, born and raised here in Sacramento, went to Holy Spirit School.
Mm-hmm.
I started taking piano when I was 7 years old, which is kind of the typical starting age. And I went to St. Anthony's
mm-hmm.
growing up. St. Anthony's, St. Charles Borromeo over there on Center Parkway. Then went to Jesuit, and at Jesuit, that's where I really cultivated my love of music. I was in band. I took my piano more seriously. And then after Jesuit, went on to University of Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
and I was a math major initially. Yeah, and I actually did finish my math major.
I knew there was something wrong with you.
Yeah, something's not right. And but I also continued my music there.
Mm-hmm.
I got a second major in piano, but one of the most formative times that I spent at Notre Dame was actually at the Basilica of the Sacred Heart. I don't know if you've ever been there.
Right, yes.
I joined the choir there my junior year,
mm-hmm.
and just the beauty of the church, the beauty of the liturgy, the beauty of the music really drew me. It enriched my faith. And after senior year, I decided to do a year of service where I actually worked with people with AIDS in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, I was just contemplating, what am I going to do after this year? And it just hit me, you know what? I really love music. And, you know, I was an idealistic young guy back then. And I thought, I have to do what I love. I can't,
yep.
you know, just do math because it might make me more money or because that's what I got my degree in. So I decided to pursue music further. Actually went back to Notre Dame to get my master's in organ performance,
mm-hmm.
but I also did a lot of study in sacred music and liturgy, and I assisted at the Basilica of the Sacred Heart with the choirs and playing lots of daily masses, so
right.
I really learned how to play the organ for mass there at the Basilica.
Wow.
And then after that, I was a music director in Grand Rapids, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and then after two years, I saw that the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament was looking for an organist, and the music director at the time, Jackson Schuth, he talked to me and said, I would really like you to apply for this job,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, God really blessed me. He gave me that job, and
wow.
I came home, and, you know, I like to say that I'm really blessed that I am able to work at the cathedral, which is actually a church that we would attend quite frequently when I was a kid, because it had the what I call the last chance mass.
Mm-hmm.
They had
yes,
a noontime
right,
mass,
right.
So if you missed the 9 a.m. at St. Anthony's, we had to go to cathedral.
Right.
And then I also, you know, I work at Jesuit. I've been teaching there since 2012, and I teach choir. So I get to basically pay back the institutions which really have been formative
wow.
in my life.
Wow.
Young,
so
young
is Notre Dame, do they ever hold mass at the grotto?
They do. Once in a while, there is an altar there. I believe one of the big masses that they celebrate is actually what they call the senior class mass,
mm-hmm.
which is the very last mass, you know, before you graduate.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That senior, wow. the graduation week.
Wow. And Grand Rapids, don't they make Wheaties there or something?
They make a lot of things. Office furniture, that's the big thing. Actually, my parish was right around the corner from the Amway headquarters. So
oh wow!
I had a lot of my singers worked for Amway.
Worked for Amway. Oh wow,
yep.
That's great. Well, so piano to organ. I mean, similar. They have keyboards. I guess they're similar
yeah.
to typewriters too.
Mm-hmm.
But the organ is first time I heard organ music, or at least conscious of organ music. It's like I'm hearing the angels sing. Where did this music come from?
Yeah, it's so, it's truly what Mozart called it, the king of instruments. It just has such a sonic range that not even the orchestra can match.
Yeah.
You know, some of these organs, if you go to the, you know, some of the largest ones in churches in the world, you're looking at organs that have 5,000 to 10,000 to 15,000 pipes.
Wow.
Making all these various types of sounds. And so you have pipes that are as small as a pencil or as large as, I believe, like 8 feet in diameter and 32 feet tall. So, I mean, it's unmatched in its power, in its grandeur. Historically, I believe people liken the tone of the organ to the voice of God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
I'm not going to dispute that.
Especially when it's played really loudly, right?
Yeah. Well, and it was always, at least when I was a kid, it was always up in the choir loft, you know, or at least seemed like it seemed. So it was like the music was coming from on high.
Yeah.
I wasn't watching somebody playing it. Mm-hmm. It was just coming out of the sky.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the unique things about the organ is that, you know, most instruments, they have a sounding board. So the outside of the guitar, the case of the piano, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really limited to the instrument itself. But church musicians call the sounding board of the organ is actually the church building itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the church really resonates with the tone of the organ. And having it placed above and high, close to the ceiling, really really helps project the tone of the organ across the church.
Are we still building churches like the old cathedrals with the organ in mind in terms of acoustics and all that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And actually, I believe at like churches like St. Clair's in Roseville and the one in Lincoln, they were all built with
St. Joseph's,
with the acoustics and the possibility. There was, I believe, they determined that every new church should have at least the possibility of putting in a pipe organ.
Mm-hmm.
So they were built with putting an instrument in those churches, and they do. Those two churches do have instruments, but they're electric, not pipe organs.
So we're with Rex Schalanka, the director of music at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament downtown. I can't imagine going to work there every day. I can't imagine walking into that building every day. That is such a beautiful building.
Yeah.
And, you know, people, I'm sure even during Holy Mass, you got tourists walking in there saying, oh, we got to see this church. It's just so beautiful. Hey, Rex, we should tell our listeners, we're going to have you back a few times. So I'm sure we're going to learn a heck of a lot more. But I know you brought some music with you.
Yes, I did.
Why don't you introduce the first cut here and give us a little background on it.
Okay. So I give an overview of liturgical music, and I thought, you know, in 4 hours, that's very difficult.
Right.
I thought what I could do is talk about various time periods from the earliest time of recorded music, recorded meaning written down, to today. And in preparing for these a series of talks, I thought, what would be a good way to go about this? And I thought, let me talk about the Mass, the Requiem Mass, because throughout the ages, there have been composers that have written Masses for the funeral. And it started right from the very beginning, and I think there is a fascination with the funeral Mass. And another reason I wanted to look at these is because they're so beautiful. The music is so beautiful, from the simplest Gregorian chant to what I'll talk about in a few months, the modern settings of the Requiem Mass. So what I thought we would do is look at, let's cue up track 9.
Track 9.
And this is what you would, this is the Requiem Aeternam. So this is the introit of the Gregorian chant Mass for the funeral. It's in Latin. It's what we would call plain song. It's simple. There's no harmonies. Everyone is singing the same line. You'll notice that, I believe in this recording, it's only guys, because historically only males were allowed to sing in choirs, unless it was in a nun, you know, in a convent.
Right.
Men, single line, no instruments. You know, it's just the pure human voice, pure God-given human instrument. So let's go ahead and listen to this. Requiem Aeternam. We'll stop it at minute 48.
Very good. Malanka, the music director at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. Rick, that may be plain song, but not plain to the heart.
No, and you know, this is just a setting of the psalm. Well, it starts off with a passage from one of the apocryphal books, Requiem Aeternam, Dona Eis Domine, eternal rest grant them, O Lord, and let eternal light shine upon them. This is part of what we call the propers of the Mass, and this would be something in our modern liturgy that we would sing if during the time when they bring the casket and the whole procession is coming down the center aisle, and I just picture just something very comforting about, you know, having that that song with that movement. And that's one of the beautiful things about liturgical music, is that there's always a purpose.
There's a purpose, yeah.
Yep, it's associated with a part of the Mass. And so...
Yeah, and no musical instruments?
No.
And we were speaking of the organ. Just, I wanted to ask, how long have we had something that you could call an organ?
I believe the oldest organ that is still working was built in the 12th century.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's in a church in Switzerland. And it doesn't sound like the organ at the cathedral. It's very crude. But what's very interesting is that there is a video. If you look it up, just type in oldest organ, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very good video of Diane Bisch, very popular female organist. She was on EWTN for many years. She's playing that organ, and it's fascinating. There's a video of her walking up the up that stairwell, the very narrow stairwell to the organ, and just to hear those, truly ancient pipes. We are hearing a sound that people from the 1200s were listening to. I mean, it's something that we can't replicate today because we don't have recordings from back then.
Right.
But we have the instrument, which is amazing.
Oh boy, that is amazing. Rex, do you have another cut for us?
I do. Let's go to number 15. This is the Sanctus. And what is interesting about this is that, so this is from the Requiem Mass, but this Sanctus would be very well known to churches today that try to sing Gregorian chant.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the Gregorian chant, a couple of these parts of the Mass, the song, the Holy Holy, and maybe the next track we'll play, the Agnus Dei, are also probably the most common Gregorian chants sung in churches. So let's hear track number 15.
Sanctus, Sanctus, Sanctus Dominus Deus Sabaoth, plenis ut celi et terra gloria tua, hosanna in excelsis,
Yeah. Well, it's like, boy, talk about mood music.
Yeah, yeah. The we're in today's church we have just so many languages, but the Vatican II documents all talk about using Latin to unify all of us who speak so many different languages.
Mm-hmm.
And that I wanted to play that song to us because that's the one that we use at the cathedral, especially at diocesan services, when we have people that speak many languages, Filipino,
mm-hmm.
Chinese, Spanish, English. When I find that singing that song to us, and then the next track, if we have time to listen to that Agnus Dei, those truly help unify us in song.
Wow. Agnus Dei, everybody know, we certainly know that word, those words.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's funny. The first time I heard this Agnus Dei was when I was a kid going to St. Charles Borromeo. The priest would always start it off a cappella, and then the whole church would just join in. I'm like, how do these people know this Latin? I'm taking Latin class, but did all these people take Latin class?
my wife took 4 years of Latin in high school, and now she says I can't speak a word because I nobody speaks it around me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think she uses it on me every now and then. How do you say "take out the garbage" in Latin?
Oh gosh.
So, Rex, just before we get, I think what we'll do is we'll do the Agnus Dei on the way out.
Okay. Sure.
But you said Gregorian chant, and yep. We hear that all the time. Define what that is.
So, legend is that Saint Gregory. Now I don't know which one it is. I'm sure there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 12. Legend has it that God spoke to Gregory, and Gregory wrote down the chants. Legend, okay. Now, historically, Gregorian chant was composed from around the 8th century, really up until the modern times, because there are people who are still trying to write in the style. And what makes Gregorian chant so important in the history of particularly Western music, it's that it was the first widespread codified musical notation. Mm-hmm. It has those square notes. And so that was really a pivotal moment, because music beforehand was primarily handed down by oral tradition.
Right. So these were actually written down, the square notes.
Yeah. So, I mean, these monks would handwrite it, you know, and it's amazing when you go to Europe and you see the old manuscripts. I mean, these books, they could take up a whole wall, because they only made one copy for the entire monastery, right? And so the monks would gather around this book on this humongous music stand, and the book had to be big enough so the 20 monks or 30 monks could read the music together.
Sounds like a Monty Python skit.
Yeah, exactly.
Rex, I know you're going to be back soon, and we will definitely look forward to that. Give us the intro to the Agnus Dei, and we'll say goodbye and say thank you so much for joining us. And next time we're going to expand the time you're on. give this even more play. But give us an intro to the Agnus Dei, and, okay. And again, thanks for all you do.
Thank you. It's my pleasure being here. We're going to listen to track 16. Agnus Dei, translation is, Lamb of God, you take away the sins of the world. Have mercy on us. Lamb of God, you take away the sins of the world. Grant us peace. And we all know that that's the part of the liturgy right before we receive communion.
Yes, absolutely.
The fraction rite.
Agnus Dei, quidonis peccata.
We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
I was sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain.